Welcome to Big Blend Radio, where we celebrate variety and how it adds spice to quality of life. So everybody, welcome back here to Big Blend Radio today. We're excited to have Matt Kost back on the show. Matt was on our show back in spring of 2023. And now that we're getting into spring, it's time to catch up with him because apparently he's been busy. How many, I think it's, is it 12 books, Matt? 13 books? How many books now?
The end of this month is my 14th book is going to be published, Pirate Trap.
Oh, now Nancy's reading that. She's loving it. She loves all your books. She steals them. You know, she's like, no, give me that. I'm reading it. That's it. You go back to work. I'm reading. But the last time you came on the show, we talked about Velma Gone Awry. We want to talk about Pirate Trap, but also you had another book in there between Velma and before she went awry. We had Mainly Wicked. So you want to give us just an overview of Velma Gone Awry for everyone, because that is so cool that you bring all these characters and, you know, into this whole storyline.
Yeah, so the Velma Gone Awry was the one that we spoke about last year when I was on. And it has a Hungarian detective named 8 Bello, the numeral 8, because his mother thought that he was going to be a girl and had picked out a girl name for him, Marguerite. But when he came out a boy, she wasn't prepared, so wrote down the number 8 on the birth certificate. And so he's a Hungarian PI in 1923 Brooklyn. And in that one, he's hired to find a missing flapper woman, the daughter of a wealthy German businessman in Brooklyn, where he lives in Bushwick. The sequel to that is actually coming out the end of July of this year.
Oh, cool. So
we also have City Gone Askew coming.
Oh, so that's the one that's coming out in July?
Yeah.
City Gone Askew?
Yeah.
And is he still in Brooklyn?
He is. He's in Bushwick, is where he lives up on the third floor, and his detective agency is on the second floor. And on the first floor, there's a restaurant, and in the basement, there's a speakeasy. So he's kind of got
Perfect.
Everything taken care of in the building.
Well, I hope the Brooklyn Bridge doesn't get askew. That could be dangerous, you know, just saying. Well, tell everybody who Velma is.
Velma is a 25-year-old flapper who goes missing, and her father hires 8 Bello to find her. And she is just this kind of will-o-wisp that's kind of flitting in and around places and knows all of these really talented, creative people. She's a good friend of Dorothy Parker, who becomes a main character in Velma Gone Awry, and she actually is going to come back and also be in City Gone Askew. So, and she plays music with Coleman Hawkins and dances on stage with Mae West, and, you know, just does a little bit of everything. F. Scott Fitzgerald says that she might be a better writer than he is. And so she's just this hugely talented person who has gone missing, but perhaps she wants to be missing and not found. So that's kind of the awry part.
Huh. So I'm glad we bring her up because it is, you know, Women's History Month. And, you know, now we have we launched it on the March 1st. It just happened. We were like, well, let's just do it. Because why wait? We have a Women Making History podcast now. So we might have to re-air Velma for that podcast so people can get to know her. Because I think she made some history, you know?
Yes. Yeah, she's a very fleshed out character. There's a lot going on with Velma.
That is a good way of putting it. That's interesting. I like that. So did you find with the book, are you getting both men and women reading it because of it, of the female character, even though you have your number 8 dude, right? Or is it both, or are you seeing women into it?
I think that I get a lot of women to read that, as well as most of my books. I've been lauded for having very strong female characters in my book, which, you know, I work hard to accomplish that, and also very careful and sensitive to not get myself in trouble or anything like that.
You know, you've got to be careful because women are good criminals too. You know, they really are. And you know, they sometimes get, you know, we've got Women's History Month right now, and a lot of times it's always, yes, the inspiring ones. But some of these outlaws and crime women in crime were so complex in how they ran things, and I think were really, really smart. And if they were doing it a business, they would be like the CEO of Google kind of thing, some of them that are really good. Some of the, you know, drug traffickers, murderers, murderesses, I should say. It's fascinating to me.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think that there's something very attractive about a woman who's very complex and has good and bad and can be
Yeah.
angry and mean and as well as nice. And it makes for very good characters in books and in movies, I
Yeah.
guess, as well. So,
Yeah, because we all want to like the villain. A lot
right.
of times, aren't we all kind of rooting for the villain in books? Isn't it weird how we do? We kind of want to do that. So that does good with women characters.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you get the books or the shows where, you are rooting for the villain all the time.
I know, come
And
on,
you kind of
because it's,
wonder why. You
I
want
don't
them
know what
to
it
get
is.
away from the police or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, when you put all, look at this, like 14 books, right? And you're very strong with your characters, obviously, you know, and you get into history. But do you kind of get into the psychology of people? Did you have to do any like psychological research on your characters?
I try and dig in into my characters, and if it is somebody like a serial killer, you certainly will read up on serial killers. The second book in the Clay Wolf series, which Pirate Trap is the fifth one, but the second one is called Mind Trap, and it's about a cult. And so I did a lot
Cool.
of reading about cults and
Oh.
what that embodies and why people fall for it and the charisma of the leaders that do it. So, that would be a good example of, yeah, really digging deep into the mindset of somebody and some people that follow those cults. And oh, some of that stuff would just absolutely blow your mind. There's
It's
so many
crazy.
cults out there.
Yeah. The cult, like they should, there's Pulp Fiction, but it should be cult fiction. I really like, I'm so like fascinated by it, about how it happens. Like even Charles Manson, and now I'm wondering if he really did take the acid from the CIA thing. You know, like there's that whole story about, you know, the CIA, you know, doing all these test drugs in San Francisco. And I think they even did it in New York City and watched how people were, you know, how, what happened to their bodies. And they say that Charles Manson, I mean, he was a cult leader,
Yeah.
that maybe he was part of that too. And that's what happened to him. But I kind of feel like if you're like a cult leader, there's something sadistic about it, you know?
Right. And
It's
most of the cults that we know are just the ones that are exposed and do some horrific thing. But there are so many cults out there that exist that we don't even know about
And
because
they
we
do it
haven't
under the
done it.
guise of religions a lot of times, right?
Yes. I mean,
Yeah.
it could be argued that Christianity is a cult.
Oh boy, you're going to get us in trouble. And we're recording this on a Sunday. Oh boy, here we are. Let's
Oh,
go. Let's go. Let's go. Well, yeah, well, going at, you know, cults, it's to me, it's fascinating. And you know, okay, that's a whole show. We need to do a whole show on cults. I'm serious. I find it fascinating because there's certain things like the Scientologists right now doing some really, there's some crazy stuff going on with all of that that it makes you kind of like, ooh, that's, you know, L. Ron Hubbard, come on. He was like what, a boat captain that was interested in sci-fi? So how, come on.
Do you know what Scientologists actually believe? To not dwell too long on this, I'll give you the quick version. But they believe that 75 million years ago, a galactic overlord came down to Earth with transparent beings and put them into volcanoes and used hydrogen bombs to blow these people up. And then they went together and lived forever. And so people in the Scientology live forever. There's currently nine boats out at sea that never come into port with the highest ranking Scientologists on them. And They had to sign a 5 billion year contract to go onto these ships.
Okay, you're freaking me out just a little bit.
That's
But
what
now, okay,
Scientologists believe.
well, they might as well be part of the Flat Earth Society at this point, too. I
Right.
mean, come on, they might run into an ice wall. It's, well, I don't think, anyway, so that's Mind Trap. I need to read Mind Trap. This is going to be my book now. That's my thing. Nancy doesn't get a hold of that yet. So I'm doing that first. Okay, so we'll leave the zone of cults. Now I am going to create a show. We're going to do something on cults. I can't stand it. It's, as Nancy and I traveled the country and pet sit, that we ended up pet sitting in a cult, what we called the cul-de-sac. One street owned by one guy in the cult. And he comes walking once in a while, comes home from Colombia dressed in these white robes and walks up and down the street. And he has a little hat that looks like, a baby's bottle top, trying to be polite.
Okay, I can picture what you're saying.
you get it. And so what people would do, they'd go up and down the street, and it was mostly women living in these houses that he owned, and they owned, this was an insane story, but every time they'd go in and out of their garden gates, or their gate to go into their house, they'd twirl around, then stop, open the gate, twirl around again, like they were blessing the porthole to go to their home or out. Anyway, so everyone, we need to all read Mind Trap. This is fascinating. Okay, so I'll get off of that. Let's go to Mainly Wicked. Tell us about this. This is a Gough Langdon Mainly mystery. So this is one of your series. How many series do you have?
I have three series.
Wow.
The Mainly Mystery series is the Mainly Wicked is the fifth book in that series. The
Wow.
sixth book, Mainly Mayhem, is due out in November.
Oh, wow.
But Mainly Wicked is my wife asked me what sort of dark place I was in when I wrote that. So I guess it does get very wicked.
Okay, so what, give us an overview so we know what to expect with this darkness. Did you twirl? You didn't twirl at the gate. That's what's going on.
Well, you might be interested in this one too, because we start off with a missing person. And our PI, who is in Brunswick, Maine, Gough Langdon, who also owns a mystery bookstore, and he
Like you
can't
used
really.
to, right?
I used to, yep, exactly. He can't really support himself in Brunswick, Maine, with either vocation. But if he puts the two together, he's able to make a living. And so he's hired to find a missing person. And in the process of that, he starts digging in further and further, and he finds that there is a old grotto or a mission from the Church of Satan. So the Church of Satan is a
Oh.
place that really exists and today and has its followers, and they believe that Satan was really God and was kicked out of heaven, and so they worship Satan, but in some facets, they're kind of reasonable in their beliefs, and some of them are not so reasonable and are pretty far-fetched.
Wow.
But this grotto is so extreme and radical that they're expelled from the Church of Satan, and they end up in Durham, Maine, right outside of Brunswick, and they kind of go underground for years, but they're starting to resurface, and people are disappearing. And perhaps being eaten during the super moons.
This is really up my alley. This is my
Okay.
style. This is my style. Well, when we lived in South Africa, there was this, we didn't really have Halloween. Now they celebrate it there, but back in those days they didn't. They weren't so Americanized. But the Satanists would go out and steal people's cats and poison them. We did have like a satanic culture. Then it became like kind of the goth thing. And I was in high school at that point. And so the goth thing attracted us all. But like other people would go, you're becoming a Satanist. No, we just like wearing black and being weird and listening to really, grungy music, and Nancy would always say that they're dancing like termites. because of the way the music was. Like, if you, it's all like, there was like underground house party kind of, anyway, yeah. We weren't Satanists, but then there was a batch of true Satanists. And it was like the cool thing. Like, you know, it became this. Sorry, anybody who truly believes in Satanism, you know, but they really did think it was cool.
Right. Now
That's got
it's,
to be
you
freaky
know,
if you're a parent.
that there's a lot of believers, whether it's in Scientology or Satanism, that truly believe these things. So.
Oh, wow. Now I just hear the church lady, Satan from SNL. I just got that in the back of my mind. But man, so this is like a real place.
The Church of Satan actually exists and has a
That's
lot of
creepy.
adherents and followers dating back to the early 1970s. And if you could look it up on the website, and you know, you see their
Wow.
mission statements, and you know, some of it is pretty reasonable. Like, you know, don't bother anybody else unless they bother you, and then end them. So things like that, you know. So.
You know, this is wild. Like, there always are these compounds. Like, there's one out in Big Bear area, Crestline, California, that we went out to. And it's there's like these compounds that there's a weird vibe to these places. And maybe it's just that we're spooked because you kind of know the history. And you go out there and you just wonder, like, were there human sacrifices here? You know? And that kind of thing. It's have you been to places like that, the old compounds? And it's like going to a sanatorium kind of thing from way
Yeah,
back
I mean,
when.
I've seen them. I don't think I've ever been inside of one though, so
Ooh.
I guess I'd be afraid that I wouldn't get back out, right?
It's weird, like if they're desolate and they're empty, right? So you just kind of wonder what went down and why these buildings are empty, you know? So there's that mystery that kind of goes off in your head. So it's fun, but it is still creepy. There's no matter what, there's a creepy vibe, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
And cannibalism, like you're talking about people being eaten and stuff, that stuff is creepy too. I don't, we,
That's
it is.
an understatement. Yes,
They had
that
those,
is creepy.
I mean, I'm not kidding. I mean, we've been to a cannibal, the cannibalism happened up in the east coast of Kenya, and we went to Getty Ruins, and this was where cannibalism really took place at one point. And that was a freaky place. And there were snakes all over the ruins and butterflies and monkeys, just tons of snakes. Do you want to tell me what that's about? That's weird. So anyway, let's have a freak out conversation. So, all right. So Satanism. Wow. Okay. I never would have think Maine just seems so pretty and fresh and beautiful. I wouldn't think, but you know, tell us a little bit about your characters.
Mainly
Mainly Wicked.
Cricket is, you know, Gough Langdon is the primary character, but through the course of the books, he does also meet our really, she's works at the bookstore with him, and then he falls in love and ends up marrying Siobhal. So Siobhal Langdon is now married to Gough Langdon, and the two of them sort of run the bookstore and the PI business together. So it's a husband-wife team, and they have a
Cool.
colorful cast of characters. You know, there's the typical large bear of a cop named Bart. Who's a hulking, gruff-spoken but soft-hearted guy, and there's the hipster lawyer Jimmy 4x4, who was back in his day in the 90s, you know, one of the rising stars in the New York law firm, but he was working, you know, 7 days a week, 15 hours a day, and just snapped at one point and gave it up and quit and walked out and drove to Maine and traded his BMW on the way for a Volkswagen van, and which broke down in Bodenham outside of Brunswick. And after a few years, he got his Maine bar license and practiced law and went from being a hippie to being a hipster now.
With steampunk objects in his office.
Yes.
That's classic. I love this. So when you're putting these characters together, because I would like getting characters together, their names, because you always have really good names too. But they're this, colorful is definitely the word, right? When you're putting like their profiles together and starting to get to know them as you're writing, do you get the giggles when you're writing? Do you ever start laughing like, oh, I'm going to make this person do this? Because I would. Like, to me, it's funny. Like, hey, let's make him do this because you can. Like, why not?
I don't know if I giggle, but at points I'll utter something aloud like, oh my goodness, what am I doing, or oh, that, or what are you doing, or because I am constantly surprised by my characters. It was
That's wild.
actually in Mainly Wicked that I was three quarters of the way through the book before I said, oh, that's who the baddie is. That's who the
No
villain is.
way. So you let it take its natural course, too.
And I was leaning in another direction, and three quarters of the way through, they just revealed themselves. And of course, I had to go back and weave some things in to make that work. But it was three quarters of the way in where I kind of reversed, character and said, that's who it is. It's not this person, it's this person.
That's cool though, because you have to, you can't with mystery. I think in crime writing it's got to be really difficult because, it can't be so over the top difficult to figure it out, but you can't let the cat out of the bag. You know what I mean? It can't be too easy. So that kind of sitting on your shoulders, like, okay, let's have some wild stuff. But if it was three quarters of the way, your readers are probably going, oh, it's going this way, but it didn't. Like you kind of threw them a
And that
curve.
is where editing comes into play, not just, making sure everything's spelled correctly, but there's a developmental edit that, I usually go through several versions of that, one with a professional editor, one myself, and one with my publisher editor, where they make suggestions and changes that might be, like we got to change this character, or you need to, build this character more. So when I did something like that, I had to go back and drop those nuggets that you speak of about that character, because you do not want to just pull the rabbit out of the hat and say, oh, nobody saw this coming, did you?
Yeah, like ha ha.
When you pull the rabbit out of the hat, you have to, the true hope is that the reader goes, oh, that's right. That's why this happened.
This and this happened.
They said
Exactly.
that, and it all kind of comes together, but like you said, doesn't come together before you do the big reveal.
And at the same time, you don't want to dumb down your audience either. You know what I mean? Because people who read mysteries are smart. They're always thinking like, what if, what if, what if, which is the coolest thing on the planet is to have the what if mentality. Like, why
Right.
not? I don't, it's fun what you do, but I think I would drive myself nuts because I would be paranoid that it didn't work. You know what I mean? That I'd be paranoid that I thought it was really good, and then it goes out and people are like, I knew who it was in the beginning. Like
Sometimes, occasionally, somebody does figure it out, but that's hopefully not the bulk of the people. And
yeah.
just like
But it's
sometimes.
also the story of people. That's the cool thing too. It's like characters in mysteries, like the setting is always important, right? And I know you've done a lot of Maine, but and then Brooklyn, right? But it's so important. The characters are everything because it's you're watching human nature, So
I kind of like to say that a mystery is really just fiction where something happens.
yeah, there it is. I like that. I like that. I like that. So let's talk about the new one coming out. We're going to move on from Satan. What's happening? Oh, we're going to Pirates. Okay, Pirate Trek.
Yes.
Nancy is loving this. This is out March 27th, 2024. So you can go to mattcost.net, Amazon, all those places, right? Go get it wherever you want to get it. And if they don't have it locally, go knock on the bookstore door. Matt knows about that, right?
Absolutely.
And yeah, you do want to go and have that conversation with your local bookstore, right?
Yes.
If there's someone you like. Yeah.
I buy all my books through my local bookstore, so I
That's cool.
pulled the plug on Amazon on my book buying and do it with the local bookstore, but wherever people want to is fine.
And bookshop.org is doing pretty good, I think, with that
Yes.
as well. Yeah, kind of a independent rival. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so that's cool for people to get it. Okay, Pirate Trap. Talk to us about Sid Black Sam. See, I love your character names. It's fun.
Black Sam Bellamy actually existed. So,
Oh.
just to give a little background, I guess, and catch people up to speed, Pirate Trap is the fifth book in my Clay Wolf Trap series. The first book was Wolf Trap, with heroin being smuggled through lobster traps. And then we go to Cults and Mind Trap. And then we go to genome editing in Mouse Trap.
Oh,
And
wow.
unexplained aerial phenomena in Cosmic Trap. So that's the quick summary of
Dude.
the first four books. A lot of stuff is going on in the fictional town of Port Essex, Maine.
Apparently. Now,
And
does Port Essex exist?
Port Essex is a fictional town, but just between me and you and anybody listening, it's loosely based on the town of Booth Bay Harbor in
Okay.
so.
We have travel stories about Booth Bay Harbor and beautiful bed and breakfasts and really good food and very idyllic setting from what I remember from all the articles.
It's an absolutely beautiful town, and one of the neat things about it that made it appealing for my use as Port Essex was that there's a real dichotomy there. It's an old-time fishing village, so you've got the
Oh.
hard-working fishing crew. But because it's so beautiful and it has been founded, there is an incredibly wealthy summer crowd that comes in and
Okay.
owns these multi-million dollar mansions on the water. And downtown Booth Bay Harbor, you're mixing these two groups of people of hard-working blue-collar workers with the ultra-wealthy. And so that creates some sparks as we go along.
Oh, I like that. But and that is like that. You know, those kind of communities. It is exactly it, you know? And especially now with people buying up second, third homes and just making them all Airbnbs. This is actually a real true drama happening everywhere we go. Like we're seeing that where it's, you know, beautiful, pristine parkland. Oh, we're going to buy a second home, but nobody actually lives in this house. And then they're actually kicking out the people that clean the hotels and do all the restaurant work. And then they're ending up having to live outside of the communities. So it's, whoo, yeah.
Yeah,
You've hit on reality. You
a
know?
financial gentrification, I guess, huh?
Yeah. But then there's always drama with the rich people too. That's always a drama, right? There's always someone, how did they make that money? You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
This is cool. So Pirate Trap. So this there's tell us about this because there
Oh.
this was like this is pirate's treasure that
So Clay Wolf is a PI, again, solely a PI. He's a former Boston homicide detective,
Oh,
and
wow.
he's in the fictional coastal town of Port Essex, Maine. And in this fifth book, he's sitting at his desk. Some bad things happened to him in the fourth book, so he's still down in the dumps a little bit from that, when two people walk in who are from New York City. And they're antique dealers. And they've discovered in a King James Bible a treasure map and a note that goes along that's kind of the code for the treasure map about this long lost treasure by the pirate Black Sam Bellamy. Now, Black Sam
Ooh.
Bellamy had a very short stint as a pirate. He's a real life person back in the early 1700s. But he was probably the wealthiest pirate ever to live for that short stint. And he would sometimes summer in Maine. And the legend has it that it was up around Machias Port, which is pretty further north than where I place Port Essex. And people have searched for his treasure up there and never found it. So I took that and I, moved him a little further south. And said this is where the treasure actually was, where he had put into port and made friends with the Native American Abenakis who lived there,
Oh,
and
wow.
then went off to retrieve his true love, this young woman from Wellfleet, Massachusetts, and on way to do that is shipwrecked, and the entire crew is lost except for two people, one of who is hung, but the other is a boat because he's a pirate by the people of Massachusetts, and the other is a young South American boy who they do not hang because of his age, I guess, and he's sold into slavery, though, and he's purchased by the grandfather of John Quincy Adams. And
Ooh,
this is all true.
that's crazy story. But there's a lot of these kind of stories too, up and down the coast. That your coastline all the way down to Florida is some
Oh,
craziness.
absolutely. And so what I fictionalize is he carries with him a King James Bible, which they allow him to keep, even though he's sold into slavery. And in that is this treasure map that kind of floats down through the generations and ends up in a estate. And these antique dealers go in, buy the Bible just because of the value of it, and discover in it that this treasure map. So they're hiring Clay Wolf to be their local liaison and help them find this treasure in Port Essex. And of
Cool.
course, things are going to get very complicated from, scurvy salvage boat operators to motorcycle gangs. And we even have a sex doll manufacturer
I
involved.
saw that. I'm like, where does this come from? Like, are you, what? I was like, what's going on in Essex?
That
I
was
mean,
one of the rabbit holes that I went down in my research, I think, and I was just
oh.
shocked at what is going on in the sex doll industry. So I had to throw it in. What
Okay,
can I
see, but
say?
that's what I mean. This is when you start chuckling partway through. Maybe not giggling because you're not a girl, but you know what I mean. It's
Yep.
like it's.
Maybe I do chuckle and giggle. I think
I
certainly at
mean,
that
but
point I did.
the sex doll manufacturer, because you never, you've heard of things, seen, there's stuff in the world, but then I never thought of the people that actually make these. Nancy and I once were we were driving out. It was in the Sequoias, going towards Fresno, near Kings Canyon. And there's like this roadside lodge, like a motel thing. And we're talking to a friend of ours who we called the Commodore. And he started the Yacht Club of Ensenada, Mexico. So it's kind of crazy. Long story. But anyway, we're on the phone with him because he always wanted to know what stupid things we're up to on the road. And we're driving and I'm like, oh my gosh, look what this, what's going on? There were a bunch of guys getting out at this motel and they had a big giant blow up doll. And I'm like, dude, there's a giant blow up doll. He's like, no, keep driving, keep driving. I'm like, no, we want to see what they're doing. And he's like, keep driving, get back on the road, get back off the road. And to this day, I mean, because they were carrying, there was like a bunch of guys, younger guys. I don't know what they were doing, but this woman was blown up, and they had her above their heads, and they're walking with this, going towards one of the rooms. And I'm like, I know it's going to be a prank. For somebody, something was going on. Maybe like a bachelor, what is it, a bachelor party or whatever. But he's just like, keep driving, keep driving. It was like when you get into that stuff, it starts getting to me like a David Lynch movie. I feel like Dennis Hopper needs to be in this.
Again, I had an image of the blow-up doll as being what sex dolls are, but now they're robotic, lifelike,
What?
and
No.
is a very big industry.
Oh my gosh. And
We'll
they're going
try
to
not
be
to get too
AI
far into this.
generated. We're going to get into age AI generated sex dolls. Is that what's
Oh,
coming?
absolutely. It's out
It's
there.
already
It
there. It's
exists. And
Wow. So you went down a
you will
really
know when.
weird rabbit hole.
You will know when Nancy gets to the end of Pirate Trap because she will say something to you.
Of course she will. Oh
I
my
can
gosh.
guarantee you that there will be a correlation at that point, but I'll keep quiet about it now.
Oh my gosh. I think we're going to have to record Nancy after this now. Like, we're going to have to do a separate ending, but then we don't want to ruin it. Okay. We're not going to, but that is so funny that you bring that up, though. I mean, like, Yeah, you, how is your mind doing all of this? I mean that in a positive way. My gosh, your Google, I always talk about this with crime writers and mystery writers. The Google searches, you know, if they got a hold of you, like read your Google search, they may think, like, what is this? You
I'm
know?
surprised that the FBI has not descended upon my house yet.
Yeah. That could be a cult too.
Well,
But that. But that's crazy, man. That's a so, but I mean, Pirate's Treasure, that is like none of us not like that's some that's like our inner child always wants that. And there are people doing that. There's a guy who left treasures all around the country, and people take this book around whenever they're traveling, and they try to solve the riddles to try and find the treasure.
oh, that does really exist. Interesting. I'm watching season 10 of Black. That was Longmire. Longmire has
I
that,
think,
and
yeah.
they are doing that sort of thing in the Longmire book. So I
There,
wondered if that existed.
there's one in Amelia Island, Florida. Some friends went there, and I was reading the book. It's like riddles. And so I was trying to, like, no, it's here, it's there. And they're like, no, it's this. I'm like, no, I swear it's here. I know it is. You know, I think maybe it was St. Augustine. Well, because that's the oldest city, right? So, yeah, I don't know, but that's it. Come on, don't you want to do that? Go and
Oh,
look for a
absolutely. I
pirate's
mean,
treasure?
I think my love of pirates started when I was not yet 4 years old. My mother owned a bookstore in Henniker, New Hampshire, called
Oh.
North of Boston, and I was not yet school age, so I spent a lot of time at that bookstore. And at some point, the local college kids started hanging out with me, and we'd sit outside and discuss what color the sky was, and it would range from purple to green and orange. And, I was just being creative. Years later, I realized that they were probably on drugs, hallucinogens.
Yeah, I'm like going, someone was tripping. Oh, there was a CIA nearby.
And they ended up taking me on a pirate, on a treasure hunt.
No
And,
way.
sure enough, they'd hidden this little chest full of candies and necklaces and gold things and this and that and water pistols. And, I was quite excited to find that. And I wasn't quite yet four. So that was
Wow.
the beginning of my love of pirates, I think, and
The
pirates.
pirate stories are so fascinating, and the one that always gets me is how, you know, the Battle of New Orleans was won, and it was the privateers. They didn't want to be called pirates. They wanted to be privateers. But if it wasn't for them, like, we would still be owned by other people. The British would have kept
What
us.
was his name? Lafayette, right?
Lafitte, 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 Lafitte. I never pronounce anything
Yeah,
correctly there.
exactly
I
me.
can't. But the it to me I don't know. It's like a I know it's like it never leaves you. You know, Nancy's got a thing about pirates. As soon as she heard you wrote a pirate book, she's like, it's mine. And it's like she, because there's, you know, rum runners, and, you know, to me, their lifestyle is, it is like the outlaws of the water. You know,
Right.
it's the same like Bonnie and Clyde and everything. They were pirates in a way, you know.
So once again, you're pointing out how much you really do like the villains.
Yes.
The
Because
Bonnie
it's like,
and Clyde and the
well,
pirates
because
and the outlaws
they
and
have to think they're taking risk, and they have to think, you know, to really get ahead. So I think for you as a writer, isn't that what you're doing too? It's like you get to be a criminal legally.
Yes. I think that's when my evil chuckles come when,
Oh.
I have my baddies do something really horrible, and that's probably when I cackle here, sort of insanely at my desk.
Oh, well, that's good. Now, do you ever like make a playlist of music, or do you listen to music with any of this, or is it like,
I have jazz music that I listen to. I put on
okay.
headphones, my writing desk and computer in the middle of the living room. I put on noise canceling headphones with jazz music without lyrics, just the music.
Yeah.
And I don't think I listen to it. It's just there. But I
Yeah.
go off into my own world and I write and
Wow.
anything, there could be four dogs and 17 different things going on behind me, but I don't know about it.
Yeah, that's funny how we have to have that kind of closure for our brain. You know what I mean? It's like we need to, I've an educator that she's retired now, but we did so many podcasts with her about education. I know you also taught. And she was saying that for studying, some kids, if they used Baroque music, they could focus and study. And it was Baroque music. And I tried to do that once to like finish an article deadline or whatever. No, it didn't work for me. It just, it's, it, no, it's pretty, but like it just, I think I'll stick with the jazz thing, like what you're talking about. That's a little bit.
And that works for me. I mean, I do know writers that will make a playlist and there'll be, rock and roll and lyrics and that wouldn't work for me,
I think we did when we were print years ago. I mean, we're talking like over 20 years ago. Deadlines were deadlines, like real deadlines. Like you have to get to the printer, otherwise you are screwed. If you don't get yours turned in, somebody else is getting ahead of you, and you could wait a week and the magazine's late. I remember many, many deadlines. Bonnie Raitt had one of her albums. I can't even tell you which one it was. As soon as I put it on, I could go right to work. It was like my brain was hypnotized to Bonnie Raitt. You know, I don't even ask me. I can hear it even now sometime, but I don't know what it's called. I don't know what the songs are called, but I know that album inside and out. And as soon as I put it on, I'd get to work and everything went away. Just focus. So it's interesting how our brains work. Well, you've really made me think about how brains work now. Colts and all kinds of stuff. This is always having fun with you on the show. I'm glad you're here. And everyone, mattkos.net. So Pirate Trap, March 27th, that is out. March 27th, 2024. And also you're going to look at Mainly Wicked, that is out now. And Velma Gonna Ride, you still got to catch up with that too if you haven't read it. So good to have you back, Matt.
Well, great. Thank you, Lisa. As always, it was great chatting with you, and I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, there's always fun. This was fun. And Nancy's, yeah, I can't wait. I'm not going to tell her. I'm going to behave. And
But she'll come to you when the book ends, and she'll have something to say about it. So,
yeah, we better not be a spoiler, but I'm sure I'll be sending you an email.
yes, please do.
I'll have to maybe record. I'll say, before you say anything, let me record this for Matt. All right. Thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio. Keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com.